Welcome to the Metaphysical Martini Show, where wit and wisdom come together to bridge the gap between the spirit realm and the physical world.
With Ani Avedisian, the Mad Shaman, a production of CosmicReality.com.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ani Avedisian. Welcome to Metaphysical Martini. Three parts spirit, one part rational mind. Add two drops of optimism, give it all a good hard shake and pour, dress it with the olives of grace and empathy. Sit back, sip slowly, and contemplate the wonder of cosmic co-creation. And a hearty hello to everyone out there. Hello, hello, hello. Thanks for joining me for yet another round of cocktails on this week's Metaphysical Martini, the show that tries to sort out what's true, what's woo, and what gets flushed down the loo. In a world that has become so soul-wrenchingly awful, each day is like having a conversation with a twat waffle. A world that has lost every ounce of decency, completely saturated in indecency, obesity, and all things dark regency. A world where the slaves fight to defend their masters. A world where the Dark Lord speaks through his newscasters. A world so lost in the dark illusion, distinguishing good from bad sends most people into frenzied confusion. A world known a penthe with which to ease the pain. Aren't we tired, humans, of repeating the same reincarnation cycle over and over again? Welcome back, martini heads. I raise my glass to you. I know you can't see me because this is audio, but I assure you, I do have a drink in my hand, as I often do, and I am not shy about drinking it because, my darlings, that's what one does with drinks, isn't it? I mean, one drinks them. If you're joining us for the very first time, a warm welcome to you. Oh, you brave, darling little souls. Be advised, this show is politically incorrect so as not to erode the intellect. On this show, we don't do woke. We know the agenda behind the death poke. If you have dangly bits, you are male. If you have a cave of mystical wonders, you are female. You are, of course, welcome to identify however the heck you wish, but you do not have the right to drag perfectly sane people into your dangerous delusions. Fun, you know, the pun fully intended, by the way. Now, we martini heads, we come from all walks of life, but we have this in common. We believe in common sense. We believe in common decency and common courtesy. And I should just interject right now and tell you, it's probably quite obvious to everyone listening, I have a very bad common cold right now. So please, forgive the vocals on today's podcast. I'm trying to breathe sanely through this whole thing. What else are martini heads all about? Well, we actually do believe that America has a sacred purpose with regard to mankind's spiritual evolution, and we are well versed in the deep state ideology that is fighting tooth and claw today to prevent the restoration of the American Republic. You could say we are spirit-centered patriots because we are awake and we are aware. And we care enough to call out corruption wherever we find it, and we care enough to do something about it, even if that something is simply supporting, vocally supporting those who are doing all of the fighting on the front lines. Now, the other thing we have in common is our love for a well-mixed cocktail. So why don't I take a sip of today's drinky poo and see if it's a winner or a sinner? Hold on, darlings, don't go away. Sipping is happening. And, ooh, surprising. This is actually, I've usually tasted it before the show, but this is my first little sip. I'll take another little sip. I'm not sure about that, but I have a feeling by the end of the show I'll feel so good I won't care. Well, more about that towards the end of the show. And as for the show, what are we doing today? Let's see. I think we'll start, as we almost always do, with quack, questions, answers, and comments. And we'll follow that with probably a tiny patch of poetry where I get to terrorize you, the listener, with my celestially acclaimed nuggets of gold, my little street poems. And after that, we'll bring back the wizard's gizzard, a small sacred ritual that you can make habitual. You have always, you guys, you're always writing in and you're saying, why don't you bring back Tarot Agogo? Why don't you bring back the wizard's gizzard? Why don't you bring back Play-Doh chips? You know what? I'm going to bring them all back. So one day we'll do the wizard's gizzard. The next show we'll do Play-Doh chips. We won't do them all at once. We'll sort of pass them out. And how will we end the show? Well, we will end the show as we always do with a cocktail of the day, which may or may not interact in a bizarre and strange way with my cold medication. We'll have to see what happens in the next few moments as we plow through the podcast. So let's get on with the show and let's start with quack. Questions, answers, and comments. Friends, if you would like to share the contents of your vast, expansive minds with martini heads across the known universe, send your emails to me, because nobody else will read them, Arnie@arnieavedisian.com, or via snail mail to Cosmic Arnie, P.O. Box 714, Wilsonville, Oregon 97070, USA. And don't forget to let me know if and how you wish to be identified, or I will be forced to refer to you as omit personal details. So, darlings, let's shake up the fishbowl of perpetual perplexity and let's see what poppity poppity pops out. Shaky, shaky, let's see what's in there today, baby. Ooh. Our first missive is from one Gloria. Gloria, who lives in Redmond, Washington, who asks, Dear Annie, if you were given no choice and had to choose one religion to follow, which one would it be? Gloria, when you say no choice, what exactly do you mean, darling? If you're asking me which one I would choose on pain of death, is that what you're asking me? Like, if someone had a gun to my head, I might say some words if I chose to live one more day. But I wouldn't be choosing a religion, because if a religion was worth choosing, I, being of sound mind and body and very much in love with my God, would already have chosen it. So I'm not sure what you are asking. Is one religion better than another? Perhaps that's what you mean. A bigger picture answer, not really, because all are based on myth or mismanaged and heavily edited, writings to push narrative. I mean, not to pick anything arbitrarily or randomly, but it is ridiculous to believe that the Almighty would give his words of wisdom to an illiterate warlord who raped a 9-year-old girl in between smashing his own soldiers up the bum. It is also ridiculous to assume that virgin vaginas pop out prophets of any faith or creed. That said, I could tell you which one I could live alongside without any issues. I have a relationship with an energy that you come to know as Jesus or Emmanuel. And when he was incarnate, he never raped young girls or bonked Roman soldiers. Or, maybe that's why Christians don't want to execute you if you leave the faith. Or that's why Christians don't want to mutilate female genitalia, turning women into nothing more than whore vessels. Or perhaps that's why Christians don't advocate for cruel and unusual punishments. I mean, yes, please, we all remember the Inquisition, but thank God we're done with those days now. Also, Christians understand the danger of marrying first cousins, and they absolutely draw the line on fathers raping their daughters. What a radical bunch of people they are. Possibly that's why Christians don't have a world domination and enslavement agenda. I'm not defending the religion, I don't defend any religions. But clearly, on one side, we have functional people trying to live better lives, and who are being diligent about calling out our pervert priests and the like. And on the other side, we have people dressed in laundry asking us to submit to what is essentially Luciferian ideology and thinking that they have the right to bring this from their culture and their land into our land and take over. And, you know, that's a lovely little hill I am sure millions of folks would love to die on. Gloria, do you see where I'm going with this? I mean, religion is for lesser advanced races. Now, please don't get your knickers in a twist. All my Christian friends and Jewish friends, and well, my Jewish friends are so radically secular, it's bizarre, but don't get your knickers in a twist, but just listen to this. It's a halfway house we should have walked away from decades ago. No prophet actually came down and said, worship me, worship me. Any prophet worth their salt wanted us to have self-realized experiences. They wanted us to connect directly with source energy, the Father, the Mother, the Godhead, whatever the heck it was called at the time. The goal is direct union with the allness. Most of us are in transition with that. It's a big jump from worshiping God to representing God, because that's what we're talking about. You know, God can't be right and wrong about everything. Oh, you can't eat beef in my religion. God said so. Oh, you can't eat pork in my religion or lobsters because God said so. Hello, are we all worshipping the same God here? You know, it's a very big jump from worshipping this external thing that actually was written by something else, something more physical. It's a very big jump. But if we're diligent with our mental and spiritual hygiene, it's just a click of the gear, a small shift in consciousness that takes us from tragic to magic. Because the self-realization state, one where you read all these scriptures and go, well, that's interesting, in the same way as Zeus and Apollo and all those gods who were worshipped, Odin and all that, they are now mythology. Don't think for one moment that 1,000 years or so from now, your beloved religion isn't going to be that. It's going to be mythology. What else came in the last week or so? I took some time off to prepare for the Crimbo season, people, by the way. So, you know, I just needed a bit of a rest. So we have a few more emails than usual, and we may have to finish them up on the next show. But we'll see how we go. And it really all depends on how this drink is going to interact with my cold meds. So right now I'm feeling quite stable, but that could change. This is from Clay. Ah, what a lovely malleable name. And Clay is from somewhere, I'm sure, but he doesn't share that. Dear Mad Shaman, what is the measuring stick for tolerance? Oh, well, I mean, clearly you're asking my measuring stick. If it harms others, if it seeks purposefully to do harm in any way, be it violence, or verbal abuse, or more subtle methods. Because a healthy human does not tolerate a threat to its existence or culture. Thank you, Clay. What else came in? Oh, this is from Roberta in Gainesville, Florida. And Roberta writes, Dear Arnie, I would like to know what the very first physical beings to incarnate onto a planet looked like. I have tried to go there in my mind, back in time, but I cannot find a way to see that far back. I also want to ask if the first forms were Adam and Eve. Now, that is a groovy little question. That's actually something that's been on my mind, too, for quite a long time. Now, some things are actually too far back in antiquity to see, unless you can get into the special archives section of the Akashic Records. And yes, darlings, there is such a place. I can only share what I was told. And it does make sense to me. So I'll share what I was told. They were essentially, we're talking about the very first forms, the very first physical forms on the very first planet of the very first universe. Okay. So they were essentially free forms. Free to express in any way they saw fit. In other words, whatever they could imagine, They vibrated it into a physical form. And how else would they have done it? I mean, the very first time source energy goes, I know I can turn into something physical, but I've never seen anything physical. What do I do now? Very exciting times. Now, was this the Adam and Eve story? I'm not sure that it was, because I believe the first gods in bods, like these dudes that came down and did the whole freeform thing, I think that they preceded a more organized effort to populate a physical planet with physical forms. So the original freeforms were just trying things out, literally titans, literally gods in bods, and were able to go, well, I've had enough of this. This is fun. And they would go back into the cumulative soul of their god. But here's the thing. What happens? You know, the original freeforms, I would imagine that their thought to manifestation time, and generally figuring out the differences between spirit and physical form, that's why they were there. How quickly could they remember that they were gods? Well, their manifestation time was instant. So it's an interesting rabbit hole to go down. And as we ascend, as we get more bandwidth, we will be able to see as far back into antiquity as we wish. So just to sum up, because I'm really feeling these cold meds right now, the original ones were free-form adventurers. But I think once they gathered enough intel, they went back into the Godhead, and then a more formal plan was devised for a population program. And I believe that's when Adam and Eve, the story of Adam and Eve, comes true, because they, in my shaman lore, we're taught that tens of, well, thousands of pairs of male and female, the atom in the ion, were created, and they did a lot of training, like on the Star Trek holodeck kind of thing, before they were projected down. But they projected down earlier than they should. The sheer excitement of being part of the first population of physical forms on a planet excited them so much that it was that vibration that took them immediately into physical form. And then they said, oh my God, we're not ready. And God was like, oh my me, of course you're not ready. And that's where we get the image of them covering up their genitals, because they had never used their genitals. How did they know it was rude? You know? Okay, that's my story. That I heard somewhere, and it makes about as much sense as anywhere else. But thank you for that question, actually. That's a really, really good question. And now we know something we didn't know 5 minutes ago. Woohoo! What else tickled the noggins of the martini heads this week? Here's another one. Here's another one. And this is from a chap called John, who didn't want me to give his last name, and that's fine. But he is from St. Albans in England. Dearest Annie, I have a serious question for you. My favorite beverage is the classic old fashioned. There is a trend today to ruin all the classics by adding strange faux posh ingredients. It's a bit like saying that a vegan pie tastes just like steak and onion pie. Well, it doesn't, because vegan pies are shit, but each to their own. Would you be kind enough to share the recipe for your favorite version of an old fashioned? Would I? John, I will do so with the utmost pleasure, because I, like you, am a fan of the classics. Good, strong, but well-balanced drinks with, say, four max ingredients and often including the dressing. That's my favorite. Let's see. Here's my very classic version of the old fashioned, one of my favorites, actually, and one we prepare often throughout the Christmas Yuletide season. Now, before I get to it, as with all cocktails that use sugar, or simple syrup, of course, is easier to use, you can sweeten to taste. I'm just going to admit it. We ladies, we do prefer the old fashioned slightly sweeter. The men, they like to taste the bitters in it, okay? But this is my framework template for the classic old fashioned. So you want to get yourself a teaspoon of sugar, or the equivalent in simple syrup, 3 dashes of Angostura bitters, a tablespoon of water if you're using sugar as opposed to simple syrup, and then 2 full ounces of either bourbon or rye whiskey. They're very, very different flavors, and you want an orange twist as the dressing. I like rye whiskey, but I prefer the warmth of bourbon, and I think most of us do. So what you do, you get yourself a mixing glass, and you add the sugar and the bitters into the mixing glass. And then, of course, if it's granulated sugar, you add water. If it's simple syrup, you don't need to. And you give it a jolly good stir until the sugar's dissolved and everything is, lovely integrated. Then you fill the mixing glass with ice and add the bourbon. Now, don't hard shake it. Stir vigorously, darling, vigorously. Give it all your vitality and vigor and stir until it is well chilled. Then strain it. Strain it into like a lowball tumbler. And in that tumbler, it's best to put in one large ice cube, what we call a king ice cube, whether it be square or whether it be round. And then express the oil of an orange twist. This is why we use organic oranges, people. Express the oil of an orange twist over the glass and then drop it into the glass to garnish. Or at Yuletide, what a wonderful little amendment to that is definitely use the fresh orange to express, but then toss that out and put in some candied citrus rind. Delicious, and just takes it up a notch, you know? A couple of points about the old fashioned. Again, I think I said this before, but again, I'm on cold meds. I use bourbon because I like the way the corn supports the cocktail. I don't know how else to put it. Bourbon has warm notes with hints of vanilla and caramel. And, that's from the oak barrels that they're aged in. And when you look at what a classic cocktail is, it is essentially spirit, sugar, and bitters. And you get the perfect cocktail when we find the perfect balance of those three, the trifecta of tipples. You see, the sugar softens the whiskey. It sort of brings down the heat of the alcohol, but it also creates a lovely mouthfeel. And through that, it allows very, very, very subtle flavors to come through. And when you add the bitters, and I do insist on Angostura bitters for this, there are a great many bitters out there. I have them all, Fee Brothers and all of them, all the expensive stuff. But if you want, there's no substitute for Angostura bitters if you want straight bitters, okay? So when you put in the bitters, now that sort of tempers the sweetness. And that adds depth of flavor. And it stops the drink from being, what's the word? I think it's cloying. Now, all that said, I'm not exactly a stick in the mud when it comes to experimenting. I have more than a few friends who are barkeepers, but one of them suggested that I omit the sugar and use a walnut liqueur instead. The name of the liqueur was Nocino. Anything that starts with noch is NOC is usually a walnut thing. I have to admit, I was hesitant because in my mind, I have the recipe for the perfect old fashioned. And that reminds me of days where we had old fashioned manners and more dignity than we do today and more self-respect. But I went ahead and I did make the substitution, and it was very tasty, and it was a very, very lovely change. And probably every third or fourth old fashioned I have, I'll make it with an Osino. But John, I'm with you when it comes to simplicity in the classics. That's why I love the martini so much. And I like my martinis quite wet, actually. 2.5 to 3 parts gin to one good part of vermouth, a touch of dirty, and a good stuffed olive, and Bob's your uncle. Actually, my uncle's name isn't Bob, it's Ara. All right. I feel the same way about food, by the way. I detest complicated recipes that call for exotic e ingredients. And they say things like, take a quarter of a clove of garlic and rub it around the bowl, and take 1/8 of a spoon of coconut-infused amino acid tincture, garnished with some plants that grow only on the south slope of the Himalayas, which grow only in July when the moon is full and the sky is clear and the Vestal Virgin has missed a period. Such fanciful notions do not sit well with the mad shaman. Shall we take another question? Let's do that. Oh, this is making me thirsty. Let me have a little sip of my drinky poo. Hold on. It's growing on me. It's growing on me. This is from, I know who this is from, but she would like to be referred to as a keen martini listener in Japan. Hello out there in the land of the rising sun. How are you all? Dear Arnie, I have been meditating twice a day for the past 2 months, and it has now become an essential part of my routine. Huzzah! Meditation helped me get over the grief from losing my pet. Oh, darling, they never live long enough, do they? Not for us. Also, I've started experiencing more synchronicity, like attracting more dogs towards me on the street, or the sun shining through the clouds wherever I go out. I truly believe meditation should be promoted more. I agree. My God, what an exceptionally well-written letter. Maybe you can tell us about the potential daily meditation can bring, or share an interesting story or two about people who have experienced a significant life change after adding daily meditation to their routine. And she also says, has anyone ever gone as far as making an astral travel? Thank you, O keen listener from Japan, for your question. Meditation means different things to different folks, but all meditation is an opportunity to be still and to recalibrate and find our spirit center, that place of serenity, which is the peace that surpasses all understanding. I thank you for your letter. I'm going to do that today, specifically because I knew you had written to me. And that's going to be the Wizard's Gizzard later on, a short segment where we discuss spirit enhancing protocols. But let me address the astro travel. It's very common. Most people do it at some point during their sleep dream cycle. If you want to learn how to do it while you're awake, the best way to begin the process, excuse me, is a strict deep breath meditation practice. And I'll discuss why in the Wizard's Gizzard. Ooh, great letter. Thank you for that. Also, I just have to say, Japan is producing excellent whiskey these days. Well done, Japan. Okay, one more question today before we move on to the gizzard and some poetry and whatever else we can manage before I zonk out from this cold medication. This is from Inga in St. Paul, Minnesota. Oh, Minnesota, you are being cleaned up right now by ice, and that makes a great many people very, very happy. Inga's question, dear Ani, are you still doing the carnivore diet? And if so, how is it working for you? Is it a forever lifestyle or a temporary measure? And how much sugar are you allowed on this diet? You know, Christmas is coming up. And we Northerners do like our sweets. Yes, indeed. I have been to many buffets from in the land of your ancestors. You do like your sweets. Inga, I have been on the carnivore diet for 14 months now. I have lost 85, bordering on 90 pounds in surplus weight and inflammation. I'm no longer overweight. But you know, I can still lose another 15 pounds or so. Because, folks, to be honest, I was a little chubster, but no more. Inga, here's what changed with the carnivore diet. I have a great many people actually ask me about this because they can see the results. They could see, oh my God, she was a fat little chunky, and now she's sort of normal. Wow. So, what changed for me? Clarity. Clarity. No more brain inflammation. And then mobility, no more painful joints. And emotional stability, no bad moods. I mean, I have my brain back. And it's, yes, folks, this is me with my brain back. I have my brain back, and it's wonderful. I can go shopping for clothes and buy things that actually look good on my normal sized body. And in the beginning, just eating meat and eggs and some cheese, you know, I thought I would be constipated. I thought I would be cranky, but it's just the opposite. Everything works well. Digestion, elimination, better than ever before. I think when people hear the word carnivore, they have this strange vision of us sitting in front of a mountain of food and eating it. They assume we eat 10 pounds of prime rib a day, a dozen eggs, and finish it off with one of those homemade low sugar carnivore custard cream puddings. I would most certainly drop dead within a week if I did that. The reality is that everybody needs a different caloric intake. Everybody has a different blood type. Everybody has a different, level of energy that needs to be maintained. For me, the reality is breakfast is a 5 ounce steak with a poached egg and 3 tablespoons of fermented vegetables for gut health. I'm not that active physically. I go for a good strong walk every day and do some stretches, but that's it. I don't need a lot of food. Lunch is actually a snack. It's one apple and 2 ounces of high quality cheddar cheese, a teaspoon of fermented vegetables. And dinner, which is always early and finished up before 6 p.m. because I go to bed at 10, dinner consists of 5 to 6 ounces of beef, lamb, or bacon, maybe a broiled tomato, or if I'm super hungry, which rarely happens on this diet, a poached egg. Now, what are the vegetables, you ask? I love vegetables. I actually do. But my stomach has been spectacularly fussy since I got sick last year. I can't combine vegetables with protein. So if I want veggies, I have to steam them and eat them at least 4 hours apart from any meat. And I do eat them maybe twice a week. I steam broccoli, Brussels sprouts, and whatever else looks green and pleasant, and eat that instead of dinner just for a change. Just for a change. One thing I found is that if you stray from your diet, from the carnivore diet, for example, if you find yourself standing outside a Belgian waffle shop and the aroma of sweet vanilla seduces your taste buds, weakening your resolve, and you're standing in the middle of the street having a seizure and drooling, well, you might say, I can have a treat once a month. But you see, that's it. Because you will find that once you start putting grains back into your body, you will become inflamed and you will experience pain. And even worse, your cravings for sugary stuff and complex carbohydrates will return. You have to have an ironclad will if you're going to do that. So beware. Beware, especially of calling something that is obviously bad for you a treat. That's the ego talking you down from a functional and fulfilling life. You've got to kick it in the nuts. You've got to break its nose and blind it with a broken bottle. That's what we were taught to do in the service. Very lucky if you had a bottle around to break. It didn't always happen. But I assure you, it works like a charm. Okay. And again, we all have different blood types. That has to be taken into consideration when a drastic change in diet is being considered. So, due diligence, take good advice, and of course, engage in prayerful contemplation before you begin. You asked, is it a permanent lifestyle for me? Oh my God, yes, with bells on. Ding, 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 ding. My mind was fogged up, and now every day is bright sunshine. Do I get bored with the diet? Not anymore, no. I mean, in the beginning, I was so excited every day. Oh, steak swimming in butter. Well, after about day 75, you'd be like, God, I could go a waffle. But you're not bored anymore because you feel so good. And there are so many types of meat and fish out there. You just have to find the ones you enjoy and react well to. And of course, you have to find the cleanest source you can for meat and for all of your food groups, of course. I'm very lucky. I have a real butcher, not a meat cutter, and he's just 20 minutes down the road from where I live. So, anyone who lives anywhere near me in Northern Oregon, I get my meat exclusively from Cutsforth Market in Canby, Oregon. The top butcher there is the son of a butcher, and all his staff are professional butchers. And believe me, the difference is night and day. And no, they don't pay me to say that. Their meat is so different. I mean, go to a real butcher who really knows where the meat comes from, knows it's not shot up with mRNA, and knows how to cut a good steak. As for sugar, I believe you asked about sugar. I use raw local honey. And if I need a sweet fix, I'll eat another apple or something. But excuse me, folks. I drink a Turkish coffee every afternoon. I use half a teaspoon of coconut sugar for that. And that's it, a piece of fruit each day, sometimes two, but I'll be 100% honest. This diet has saved my life. And I can see myself easily living another 20, maybe even 30 years. So thank you, Inga, for that question. And thanks to all the martini heads who wrote in today to share their stories. Darlings, we wouldn't have a show without you. So keep those letters coming. And together, my darlings, we will foxtrot into the new golden age of peace and prosperity. And I'll drink to that. And in fact, I am drinking to that. All righty. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the Wizard's Gizzard. Thanks to our keen listener from Japan, we will do a short overview on the need for meditation. And I have made a note to myself here to comment on the basic principles and the basic method. Darlings, there's 1,001 different types of meditation out there. Some do the same thing, some do different things. I'm going to focus on the very basic one. Your body is a very beautiful piece of intelligence that is surrounded by an energy anatomy that includes, but is not, limited to, your chakra system and the layers of your aura. And of course, you have that beautiful copper tracing of the acupuncture meridians in there as well. There's more to it than that, but in the third dimension, we still don't have access to it. So, everything that's going on in your head, everything that's going on in your body, that's your planet. Your aura is your atmosphere. Everybody is polluting their atmosphere with unresolved, unprocessed thought forms, unresolved, unprocessed emotions, and all sorts of ego-driven agendas. And in addition to that, of course, you've got all the stuff from outside, the propaganda coming in, trying to change your mind. And you think to yourself, why am I so confused? How can I find peace? Well, you're confused because you don't know who you are. You have to go to the very beginning of things and just sit there and go, I can't make sense of half of the things that happened to me. Can I start at the very beginning? Can I just sit still for, say, 10 minutes and do some deep breathing and close my eyes and relax my shoulders and just not think? But observe the thoughts that come out of me and allow them to move out. You see, when you do deep, slow, purposeful breathing with full exhales, slow, 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 and very slow inhales, you're cleansing not only what's in your body, but you're pushing everything out into the aura and all of the resonances of illness and frustration that already exist in your aura as so many satellites of woe orbiting around, making you have a sucky, sucky life. The breath removes all that static electricity from you, and it recalibrates you back to your manufacturer's default specifications. When you engage in that for about 30 days, you will start to have clarity of mind. You will know what is the voice of your spirit self and what is the voice of that nasty little creature called the false ego. And you will talk to yourself in a very different way, in a loving way, in a gentle way, in a way that says, I respect myself for being a manifestation of divine energy. So let's start with the most basic meditation there is. Sit down in a chair with your feet on the ground and your palms on your thighs. This is called the Egyptian position. It has nothing to do with the Kama Sutra, and that's India and other things. It's called the Egyptian position because most of the pictures that you see of pharaohs, they're sitting in this position. So, you're erect but not stiff. And you've already gone to the loo and pee-peed, and you've had some water because energy work burns up water and electrolytes. So you need to be well hydrated and liberally salted before you do things like this. So just set your timer for 10 minutes. Well, actually, let's go the whole hog. Set it for 12. 12 minutes and sit down, relax, and locating your diaphragm, that's in your torso, not the birth device, okay, your actual diaphragm by the stomach there. I want you to start breathing very, very slowly and purposefully, Breathing in, two, three. Really feel it filling your entire body. And then you exhale, two, three. Some people can do this for 30 seconds at a time, by the way. So start with two, three, and then you'll build up. I don't want you to have a mantra. I don't want you to think about anything. I want you to focus on the mechanical action of your breathing. Are my shoulders relaxed? Good. My diaphragm, can I feel it go in and out as I can breathe in and out? I'm breathing in. I'm breathing out. That's it. That's the mantra. Okay? Breathe in and breathe out for 12 minutes. Observe interesting thoughts that come through you. Allow them to leave. We're not making any judgment. We're not doing anything. The action of this meditation is because the divine is Wi-Fi and the breath is your receiver. So just breathe in and out for 12 minutes and allow the divine to cleanse, purify, vitalize, and stabilize your energy anatomy. And when the buzzer goes off, gong, just tap your thymus gland, give thanks, get up, drink some more water, and get on with the rest of your day. What you have done is cleared all the frustration that exists in your energy anatomy out. So, have all your problems gone? Are you miraculously healed of your cancer? No. When you wake up the next morning, are you still the same person with the same problems? Yes. But here's the difference. All your problems are going to come out of your head, and they're accustomed to sticking to years' worth of problems that are orbiting in your aura. And those little satellites of woe become honking great space stations in time. If you meditate, your aura is clear. So your confusion, your dysfunction, your delusion, all of that, whatever you have, pain, it comes out of you and waits to find a matching signature. It cannot find a matching signature, so it keeps going away looking for one and eventually leaves your aura. Now, think about what that means over days and weeks and months of meditation. That's what happens for permanent healing. Permanent healing happens when the primary vibration in your energy anatomy is the knowledge of your divine nature. And your electrical impulses are stable because you have learnt to calm your emotions, to process your emotions, not even to process your emotions until you have breathed your energy anatomy back into a place of stability. That is the simplest thing you can do for yourself. And if I wasn't allowed to do any meditation but one, that is the one I would choose. Timer for 12 minutes, Egyptian position, palms on thighs, deep, slow, purposeful breath, slow, full, purposeful, full exhales, 12 minutes. Get up, get on with your day. All right. And thank you to my Japanese friend for reminding me of that. You know, we talk about meditation and we talk about this sort of thing so many times on this show. I have to keep remembering not everybody listens to all the shows. It's okay to repeat a few of the protocols every so often. Okay, and now, my darlings, it's time for a tiny pat of poetry. Yes, folks, after a hard day's shamaning, I like nothing better than coming home, having a nice cup of tea or a small drinky poo, and writing fabulous non-peer-reviewed poetry because, my darlings, my poetry is without peer. This one is titled Such Fanciful Stories We Were Told. Such a chamber pot of lies we were sold. Here we go. There exists a supreme cosmic intelligence. We don't have the awareness to define it. Instead, we write stories to create a false precedence and pass it off as a sacred holy writ. What a load of shit. I believe this intelligence is magnificent beyond words. But not represented by men in dresses, be they imams or papists, and certainly not by those who follow the illiterate warlord of Turd who bonked his soldiers and very young girls. That's a rapist. That's the Dark Lord's playlist. Religion has nothing constructive to offer God. It's a bunch of side quests and dead ends to keep us distracted and weak and awed. It's a payment plan with no tangible dividends. Believe what you wish, my friends. One religion believes it is the last and the greatest, and that all must submit or choose to die. Those are the words of perverts and of sadists whose mental health is two apples short of a pie. Comply? Oh no, brother, I prefer to watch them cry. Back and forth between icons and relics, scriptures and canons and untouchable lies. I'll find a way. I'll find room to bypass the clerics, for the truth for so long was disguised as a fake spiritual franchise. Religion, you see, is far too small and tiny to contain the wonder of cosmic creation. Why worship a prophet when you have the Almighty? Why delay the path to what you believe is salvation? Why the hesitation? Perhaps your minds have been royally blurred, and perhaps that was done with intention. In the beginning was one silent word. We chose madness to be its extension. I do hope we make the ascension. Well, Ani, why don't you tell us how you really feel about things? Well, I believe I will. I hope you enjoyed that, and if you didn't, you're probably quite bored. So there we are. Darlings, I think that concludes our show today. I've finished my drink, and that always means the end of the show. I hope you enjoyed listening in as much as I enjoyed recording it, because I had a blast. I always do. Hooking up with martini heads all over the world brings me such joy. I always look forward to it. Now, darlings, going forward, Metaphysical Martini will be recorded every 3 weeks, a slight change from every other week, but I'm going for quality over quantity. And today's real life was chosen from a book my partner found in our local liquor store, Stafford Beverage in Wilson, Oregon. Wilsonville, Oregon. I live there, I should know. Wilsonville, Oregon. 10,000 square foot of booze and booze-related items. It's a candy store for grown-ups and chock-full of lovely people who really know their stuff. And no, they don't pay me to say that, nor do they give me free booze. It's just wonderfully lucky that I have such an amazing liquor store just a couple of minutes down the road. Now, this book is titled Spirits of the Tarot. So of course I wanted it. It has so many good general cocktailing tips in it. But the fun part for me is that each tarot card has its own cocktail. Oh my God, what a brilliant idea. And for today's show, I have chosen a cocktail named Original Sin, which represents number six in the major arcana, the Lovers. And here's how you make it. 2 ounces of Applejack, yummy, yummy. A quarter of an ounce of pure maple syrup, half an ounce of filtered water, 2 dashes of Angostura bitters, 1 bar spoon Amaro Nonino, which is a rich blend of herbs and bitters, an Italian lovely, lovely little thing, but a little goes a long way, and a large strip of good, lovely pesticide-free orange peel. So the metaphysical mixologist who wrote this book recommends pouring all the liquid ingredients into a lowball tumbler with one king-size ice cube in it and stirring right in the glass. Well, that's interesting. And then you express the orange rind over the glass, rub it along the rim and discard it. I mean, the orange rind, of course, not the drink. So does it work? I drank it. It's a pleasant drink. Yes, it's a pleasant drink. I mean, Applejack, I love Applejack. And then something sweet, and then something bitter, and a splash of citrus. You see, that's the classic cocktail recipe. And I'm sure we'll have more fun with this book in the months to come. I also want to thank Mystical Wares in Mount Vernon, Washington, for graciously arranging the intergalactic distribution of this show. I don't know that you knew this, but I'm very popular on Mars, you know, and on Venus, well, I mean, I'll be honest, I have a cult following on Venus. I'm really big on Venus. So thank you to Mystical Wares in Mount Vernon, Washington, which is your one-stop shop for all things metaphysical. And if you can't travel to Mount Vernon, you can visit their website, mysticalwares.com. Online or on location, you'll be sure to give them a standing ovation. Huzzah for Mystical Wares. I am really feeling this medication now. I am Ani, mad as the day is long, Avedisian. This was Metaphysical Martini, a production of Cosmic Reality Radio, to whom we are most grateful. Thank you, my little darling. And until we meet again, never mind what's trending, it's the restoration of the Republic that's blazing hot. And if you impede ICE or Border Patrol during the course of their duties, I hope you understand you idiots might get shot, which you fully deserve, and I kid you not. If I don't see you before Christmas, a Merry Christmas to you all and a blessed Yuletide. And remember, folks, things go so much better when we let the spirit inhabit the human.
You have been listening to The Metaphysical Martini with Ani Avedisian, the Mad Shaman, a production of CosmicReality.com.